The legends about Isabella of France paint a picture of a tragic, tormented, cruel, and essentially evil woman. In her own lifetime, the chronicler Geoffrey Le Baker called her that harridan and Jezebel. In 1592, in his play The Tragedy of Edward II, Christopher Marlowe wrote scathingly of that unnatural queen, false Isabel. Shakespeare had invented the epithet She-Wolf of France for Margaret of Anjou. But in the 18th century, when England was at war with France, the poet Thomas Gray applied it to Isabella, and it has stuck ever since. Isabella's historical reputation is not much more favourable. In 1955, V.H.H. Green called her a woman of no real importance or attraction, while Kenneth Fowler denigrated her as a woman of evil character, a notorious schemer. How did Isabella acquire such a reputation? Married at 12 to the homosexual Edward II, she grew up to be a legendary beauty, yet was largely neglected by her husband and cruelly slighted by his favourites. For many years she endured this treatment, until in 1325 she managed to escape to France, where she began an adulterous affair with Roger, Lord Mortimer, an exiled English traitor. Together, they led the first successful invasion of England since the Norman Conquest, deposing Edward II and setting themselves up as regents for Isabella's eldest son, Edward III. When it was reported that Edward II had died in captivity, rumour had it that he had been brutally murdered on the orders of Mortimer and Isabella. Yet we are now not even certain that Edward II was murdered, still less that his estranged wife was a party to it. An examination of contemporary records reveals that Isabella had many fine qualities, and instead of incurring shame, dishonour, and revilement, she might have been seen as a liberator, the saviour who unshackled England from a weak monarch and helped to put a strong king on its throne. On the 20th of May, 1303, a solemn betrothal took place in Paris. The bride was 7 years old, the groom, who was not present, 19. She was Isabella, the daughter of Philip IV, King of France, the most powerful ruler in Christendom. He, Edward of Carnarvon, Prince of Wales, the son and heir of Edward I, King of England. This union had been arranged after tortuous negotiations to cement a lasting peace between those old warring enemies, England and France. In law, women were regarded as infants, so they had few legal rights. They were viewed as assets in the marriage market, chattels in property or land deals, or prizes in the game of courtly love. Isabella's future father-in-law, Edward I, was one of England's greatest medieval kings. A born leader and a talented and dynamic ruler, he could still be unscrupulous, ruthless, cruel, and occasionally violent. A distinguished warrior, he inflicted a devastating conquest upon Wales, then spent the rest of his reign relentlessly trying to conquer Scotland. His son, the future Edward II, rarely enjoyed good relations with his father. Bound to emulate his magnificent sire and live up to his expectations, he was just not capable of doing so. Mindful that his son lacked companions of his own sex and age, the king selected 10 young men to be in constant attendance on the prince. One was Piers Gaveston, the son of a leading Gascon baron. Piers was a handsome boy, about the same age as the prince. He was graceful, active, intelligent, and skilled in arms. Of his courage there is no doubt, nor of his boundless self-confidence. He was ambitious, indiscreet, greedy, and arrogant. His tongue could be barbed, and he showed little respect for those of higher rank than he. Yet he could be charming when he wished, and he certainly charmed the prince. From the age of about 16, Edward began to refer constantly to Piers as my brother, or brother Piers. The bond between Edward and Gaveston was indissoluble. It lasted into adulthood, and surpassed the love of women, according to the medieval author of Vita Eduardi Secundi, who added, "I do not remember to have heard that one man so loved another." It was common in the military society of the Middle Ages for men to form close friendships without there being any sexual overtones. Yet that between Edward and Piers drew much comment. Robert of Reading attacked the relationship as an illicit and sinful union that was beyond the bounds of moderation, and charged Edward with desiring wicked and forbidden sex, while the Chronicle of Meaux candidly states that Edward particularly delighted in the vice of sodomy. In 1308, 5 months after he had succeeded to the throne, the 24-year-old Edward II sailed from Dover to meet and marry his 12-year-old fiancée. Isabella was an enchanting child who would grow into a most elegant lady and a very beautiful woman. It was conventional for chroniclers routinely to describe queens as being fair in visage, yet their praise for Isabella's looks is so fulsome and unanimous that she must indeed have been beautiful. Edward II himself gave her the nickname Isabeau the Fair. As far as Edward's appearance was concerned, Isabella's bridegroom was everything a young girl could dream of. Edward II was tall and muscular, with fair shoulder-length hair, a moustache and beard. He was also well-spoken and articulate. His mother tongue was Norman French, and he dressed elegantly, even lavishly. He cannot have failed to make a good impression on his young bride. On Thursday, the 25th of January, Edward and Isabella were married in the Cathedral Church of Our Lady of Boulogne. Isabella was vibrantly dressed in a gown and overtunic of blue and gold, and a red mantle lined with yellow sindon, which she was to preserve for the rest of her life. On her head, she wore one of the crowns given her by her father, which glittered with precious stones. 8 days of celebrations and tournaments followed the nuptials, until finally the King of England and his new queen bade their farewells, and, accompanied by Isabella's uncles, the Counts of Evreux and Valois, travelled along the coast to Wisson, from whence they took ship and returned joyfully to England. Edward and his new queen landed at Dover. Piers Gaveston was waiting to greet them at the dockside, and with no thought for his bride or his dignity, Edward impulsively ran to him and greeted him with an embarrassing display of affection, giving him kisses and repeated embraces, while Isabella and her uncles looked on, visibly dismayed and displeased. The coronation of Edward II and Isabella of France took place on the 25th of February, 1308, at Westminster Abbey. Gaveston had been given the responsibility of planning the event. In the morning, the King and Queen went in stately procession from Westminster Hall to the Abbey, walking along a timber pathway laid with blue cloth strewn with herbs and flowers. But all heads turned when Gaveston appeared, so decked out that he most resembled the god Mars than an ordinary mortal. He was clothed in pearl-encrusted silk robes of imperial purple, a colour that should have been reserved for the king himself, whose own finery was somewhat eclipsed by that of his favourite. What enraged the barons and shocked the people most, however, was that Gaveston was carrying that most sacred relic, the crown of St. Edward the Confessor, into the abbey, a privilege that should have been bestowed on the highest noble in the land. Gaveston's ineptitude gave rise to several mishaps on coronation day. There were so many spectators crushed into the abbey that a wall behind the altar collapsed, killing a knight. After the rather disorganized ceremonies ended at 3 p.m, the King and Queen led the vast congregation back to Westminster Hall for the coronation banquet. Although victuals had been commandeered from all the southern counties and 1,000 pipes of wine had been sent from Gascony, no food was served until after dark, and, when it did arrive, it was badly cooked, inedible, and ill-served. The king had chosen to sit next to Gaveston rather than the queen, and again the lords could barely contain their fury. As soon as the coronation celebrations were over, Isabella's uncles, Evreux and Valois, returned to France in disgust, declaring that their kinswoman was insulted because the king preferred the couch of Gaveston to that of his wife. The young and inexperienced queen had no one but her French attendants to confide in, and only her uninformed instincts to rely on. Without warning, she had been plunged into a predicament that would have taxed a mature adult, let alone a 12-year-old girl, who can have had little understanding of what she was dealing with. Isabella was now discovering that her husband was quite unlike what she and most other people expected a king to be. For a start, he didn't even seem to want to be king. He wasn't interested in ruling England, and he cared nothing for his royal duties. On the contrary, he was quite content to share his power with Gaveston and use the advantages of his office to enrich his friend and enjoy himself. He was clearly finding it impossible to impose his will on his barons and was rapidly forfeiting their respect. Traditionally, medieval kings were war leaders and aristocrats, and their interests reflected this. Edward II did not lack courage, but he hated tournaments and never went to war unless necessity drove him to it, which exasperated his martially-minded barons beyond measure. The barons were even more horrified by their sovereign's leisure activities, which included digging ditches on his estates, thatching roofs, plastering walls, working in metal, and other trivial occupations unworthy of a king's son. Worse still, his rustic pursuits inevitably led the king to fraternize in the most undignified way with the lower orders, whose company he actually preferred to that of his nobles. Above all, he loved theatricals and was a great patron of writers and players. Edward could also be wayward and difficult, petulant, vindictive, and viciously cruel. However, once his affection was given, he could be demonstrative, prodigal in giving, and unswervingly loyal. In company, he was congenial and a good conversationalist, articulate and witty. Edward's good qualities, however, were insufficient to command the respect of his people. Although he had begun his reign on a tide of public approval, he was recklessly throwing that away through his irresponsible promotion of his favourite, Piers Gaveston. It seemed to the nobility that there were now two kings in England, one in name and the other in reality. While Gaveston's star was in the ascendant, Isabella stood little chance of exercising any political influence as queen. She was effectively alone, in a strange country, and in a court seething with tensions and hostility.